We're thankful to a number of you who have come to be with us tonight from other places to visit with us and worship with us. And it means a great deal for you to be here. You had to come through some rainy weather to get here tonight. And so thank you for that. I want those of you who are members here at Overland to know how much I've enjoyed being with you this week, how much I appreciate the invitation to come and study with you and worship with you this week. It's been very good for me personally. You are such an inspiring example to me. You have such a good spirit and attitude together in the Lord's work. And while I know that only being with people for a week, you can't always see everything that's there, I do want you to know that in the week that I've had with you, I've been very favorably impressed. As I've said, it's been very encouraging to me to be with you, and I appreciate so much what I do see of you in regard to your work and your the leadership that your elders are giving to you in this work, and your obvious determination to be faithful to the Lord and to serve Him, and also to be about the evangelistic work of sharing the gospel with others in this community. So I'm glad we've had this time together. Has been very enjoyable. I appreciate so much various ones of you having me in your homes to eat or taking me out. It is all very pleasant, and I don't want you to think that I take that for granted. I do enjoy it, and I appreciate the work and the expense that goes into that. I will certainly wish you well as I leave tomorrow morning to head to Texas. I have to be in place out from Austin, Texas, Sunday morning. And so please pray that I will have safe travel tomorrow. I'll continue to think about you, and the memories of this week will be very, very pleasant for me. And I'll have a lot of good things to think about as I drive tomorrow, as I reflect over the work that we've done together this week. So I hope that our paths cross again. But if not, please know that you have encouraged me and sent me on my way refreshed and energized. Thank you so much for being who you are. I want to conclude tonight by looking with you at a very familiar statement in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 9, where Paul talks about our work in the Lord in terms of a harvest that one day will come in, but it's not quite just yet that the harvest is ready to be reaped. Galatians 6 and verse 9. Let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. You've read that verse many times, I'm sure, and reflected upon it. So we won't be saying anything new tonight. It's going to be enlightening to you in terms of new information. But I think there is a principle embedded in this passage that is very important for us to keep in our minds as we serve the Lord in our various localities. And I think the thought of this verse would be an appropriate one for us to end these lessons on as we look from this week to whatever may be ahead of us in the Lord's work. Let me begin by simply asking you why it is that you serve the Lord in the first place. Why are you a Christian? Are you in it primarily for the short-term benefits that you may receive? And there are plenty of those. There are lots of things in this life that we enjoy as a result of being members of the Lord's family. We've enjoyed many of those this week together, haven't we? So we don't minimize those things at all, but is that primarily why you serve the Lord, for these pleasant blessings that we have for a while, or is more than that involved? I believe there should be more than that involved. You're familiar with the story of Job in the Old Testament, I'm sure. You know, in the first two chapters of Job, we have the scene set where we find the devil implying that Job, this faithful servant of God's, was only being faithful because the Lord had richly blessed him. Satan very cynically implied that Job might not be so faithful if the Lord had not so richly blessed him for his faithfulness. And so, you remember the story. God gave Satan permission to start withdrawing those blessings, you know, afflicting Job with various things so that now he wouldn't have quite so pleasant a situation in this life, to see what that would do to Job's faith. And we all know Job's faith stood strong, didn't it? He had virtually everything taken away from him that he had ever enjoyed in life, but he remained faithful. I think when I read the story of Job, it's helpful for me to remember that at the time all that was going on, Job didn't know what the end of the story was going to be, as we know from having read the thing. For all Job knew, that was going to last the rest of his life, that he would die, you know, without any of those blessings ever being restored. But that didn't make any difference, did it? He remained faithful because that's the right thing to do, because God is God, and he appealed to the final court of the large judgment in eternity to right all of the wrongs that have been committed. Whether any of those wrongs are ever righted in this life or not, Job remained faithful. He did what was right, whether it was to his advantage in the short term or not. And so he's a refreshing example, isn't he, of a person who serves God for the best reasons and the highest reasons that go far beyond the short-term benefits. It is true that righteousness will be rewarded. We have the statement in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 6 that God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. So the Bible is not afraid to use the word reward in terms of blessings. But the primary reward comes to us when this life is over. I say primary deliberately because it is primary. Comes to us when this life is over. So in the meantime, this passage here in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 9 says what? In due season, that is when the right time comes, we will reap the harvest. In the meantime, let's not grow weary of doing what's good. I like, I forget which translation it is. That I saw that I really liked. It said, let's don't get tired of doing what's right. That's what the point is. While we wait for the harvest. So I want to suggest some things that I think are involved in having that very good attitude, being willing to labor and to wait and to serve faithfully for however long it takes until the harvest time comes. You know, the quality that we know Job for is a quality of character that we usually refer to as patience. You know, we have this expression, the patience of Job. And if you understand what the Bible means when the word patience is used in the Scriptures, that would be the right idea. But I'm afraid in modern English, we very often use the word patience in a little bit of a different way than what the Bible has in mind with that word. We normally think of patience as merely the ability to wait for a long time, you know, when other people might become exasperated and tired of waiting. Well, that is one kind of patience, and sometimes that can be an important quality of character to have. I got caught up in an 11-hour traffic jam a couple of years ago. Interstate 65 in North Alabama in January. I got in the middle of an ice storm that shut the interstate down for 11 hours. Well, I came upon that mess at 9 at night and didn't get out of it until 8 o'clock the next morning. It was a long night. And along with several thousand other people that were caught up in that, all we could do was wait for the sun to come up the next day. A long, cold night with absolutely nothing you could do about it except wait. I learned a lot more about patience that night than I knew before that. But that's just one kind of patience. The basic idea in the Scriptures of patience is the ability to endure hardship. And if the hardship you have to endure is waiting a long time, and waiting is going to be hard, then that's patience. But there are a lot of other kinds of difficulties that really don't involve any time element or waiting in line or something like that. It is difficult to endure. Patience is endurance. It's holding out. It's bearing up. It's persevering. Carrying the load rather than getting tired of it and laying the burden down. To do that, to endure, the patient person has to take the long view. He's got to look at more than just what's happening right now. It is a fact that if all you look at is what's happening right now, that can sometimes be so discouraging that you would give up. So Job is used as an example. James chapter 5 is where we read about the patience or the endurance of Job. James chapter 5 and verse 11. He says, we consider those blessed who remained steadfast. So, and he uses Job as an example. You've heard of the steadfastness. I'm reading from the English Standard Version. So there it uses the word steadfastness of Job. And you've seen the purpose of the Lord, how the Lord is compassionate and merciful. So the patient person, like Job, will be enduring some hardship, something that it may be painful to bear, it may be difficult, it may be unpleasant, it may be discouraging, whatever it is. The patient person endures it. Not easy, but he decides to keep going, rather than to give up, when it would be very easy to decide to give up. He chooses to keep going because it's the right thing to do. But you know, as I do, that sometimes things can be hard to endure. This world is full of things that are very difficult. The devil is going to make sure that continues to be the case until the time when the Lord puts him completely out of business. He's going to make sure that we have hardships to deal with, and sometimes they won't be insignificant. They will be very, very difficult. And the tendency is for us to bear those things for a little while, but then we get to the point where we say, I've had enough of this. And maybe we get a little bit of an attitude toward the Lord about it, you know. Why hasn't the Lord taken this away? I've been praying about this, and it's not getting any better, and so eventually we just quit. We give up the burden and say, I'm done with that. And so to endure means, that's a challenging thing. That means that you are going to keep going when maybe most everybody else would give up, and that may be no small part of your challenge, is to keep going when everybody else has given up. And that becomes a part of the difficulty, that you don't have any support, you don't have any people who are trying to endure it with you. Life, can be dark. It can be difficult. And when the darkness closes in, it's sometimes hard to remember the promises that the Lord gave to us when the sun was still shining. Sun still exists. It may just be around on the other side of the world from where we are right now, but it's still there. It's still shining, and eventually it'll shine on us as well. But we can't forget the promises and the assurances and the confidences that the Lord gave us in the broad open daylight when momentarily there may be some darkness. That makes it difficult for us to remember those promises that were so sure when the sun was shining. So patience or endurance is one of the great biblical virtues. It's one of those character traits that we are over and over again encouraged to learn to make that a part of the way we are. Really, the book of Hebrews is a book about that, isn't it? It's written to people who were on the verge of giving up, and Hebrews is a great exhortation to keep going and not give up. Look at Hebrews chapter 6, verses 11 and 12. Hebrews 6, 11 and 12. We desire that each one of you show the same earnestness to have the full assurance of hope until the end, so that you may not be sluggish, but imitators of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. You're going to inherit the promises? Those who do it through faith and patience, who endure long enough for the reward to come. Of course, written to Hebrew Christians, the obvious example given to them of the people of Israel in the Old Testament who didn't do that. They gave up in the wilderness. Many of them fell short of the great reward of the promised land because they weren't faithful until the promises were fulfilled. So, in Luke chapter 21 and verse 19, in the New King James, Jesus said, "By your patience, possess your soul." By your patience, possess your souls. There is a sense in which this quality of character that we're talking about tonight is the key to the whole thing. You can have every other one of the biblical virtues, but if you don't have the ability to keep going when it's tough, none of the other virtues are going to do you any good. If you give up before the end, it won't matter what other qualities of sterling character you had. You're going to fall short if you're not willing to. By patience, possess your soul. The ESV says in that verse, by your endurance, you will gain your life. So that's so very important. And it is interesting that in the Bible, the farmer is used as the primary illustration of how that works. And that's not just a coincidence. Of all the people in the world, those who work with living and growing things often know the most about patience and trust. Farmers, you know, only get their reward at the harvest. The fields don't give incremental benefits along the way to keep the farmer going. He's got to work and work and work in the patience and the endurance of the hot summer months to keep working and cultivating the fields, and if he gets anything at all, it's going to be at the end of the whole thing, at the harvest. That's when the reward will come. Imagine a farmer who got exasperated and went out into his fields in the middle of the growing season and started kicking up dirt, you know, and says, "You ungrateful fields, I have worked and worked and worked for you, and what have you ever given me in return?" Fields could speak, they would say, "We're not going to give anything to you until the whole process is finished. You'll get yours at the harvest time. Meanwhile, you're going to have to wait. You're going to have to endure the work that will produce the harvest." So that's the idea in James chapter 5, when James uses the example of the farmer. James chapter 5, beginning verse 7, just a few verses above where we were looking at a minute ago. Look at it. James 5, verse 7. "Be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient about it until it receives the early and the late rains." There is not much that can be done to speed up the agricultural cycle. No biochemists are working on that to try to alter the processes of nature, and we can speed up things somewhat. But basically, we've got to wait until natural processes have time to develop and to complete themselves. You just have to wait. I can't remember now the wording of this quotation I saw the other day. It was actually, if I remember correctly, I was writing on the concept of patience. It's been more than 48 hours ago, and so I don't really remember it, but I came across somebody who compared it to, you know, you're trying to hatch an egg, a chicken's egg, and you want it to hatch right now. Well, smashing it with a hammer impatiently is not going to get the result. You have to wait until it hatches. And our problem is that we're sometimes not willing for the egg to hatch. We want it now, or we're going to get out the hammer and start smashing something. And so, like the farmer, James says, if it's a question of the return of the Lord, I doubt if there's anything any of us are going to be able to do to speed that up. Much as we might like to sometimes, like the farmer, we will have to wait, maybe, for the former rains and the latter rains to patiently wait. The farmers have to have something else besides the ability to wait. They also have to have a great amount of trust. Think about it. By this point in history, the processes of nature that govern agriculture have repeated themselves through a lot of growing seasons. We've got a lot of years of history that would indicate that these processes are probably going to continue to work that same way every year. But there's no absolute guarantee of that. That's an act of trust in which you would say, well, there's a pretty reliable record here of what happens if you plant this kind of seed in this kind of soil under these kind of working conditions, and if you do this and you do this and you do this. Every time in the past of the world, it has produced this kind of result. But a farmer has to trust that that's going to work this year. And sometimes, depending on the weather or maybe economic conditions or whatever, a farmer might say, ooh, I'm a little bit nervous. I'm not sure. I trust those principles. Well, he's got to trust them. There's a great deal of evidence upon which he can base, his confidence in those principles. And so no matter what happens in the short term, no matter what the momentary evidence is, he's got to trust reliable principles and keep applying those principles in the confidence that those are trustworthy principles and that the result will be forthcoming even if it doesn't seem like that right now. If he's not able to have that kind of trust, he's not going to make a very good farmer. That is Paul's idea back here in Galatians 6, in our text. Look back at Galatians 6, and I want us to back up and read a couple of verses above where we started in verse 9. Let's start back up in verse 7 this time. Do not be deceived, he says. God is not mocked. For, and here's the illustration of the farmer, whatever one sows, that he will also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption. What's the only alternative? Well, the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. Now, why did he say in verse 7, do not be deceived? Well, because sometimes if all you're looking at is just, you got your blinders on and you're just looking at what's happening in the news today, or you're looking at just the very momentary evidence of what's happening in your life right now at this moment, that little isolated slice of the evidence, scientists would say that's a very small sample. Be careful before you draw many conclusions, that's too small a sample. But all you're looking at is a very small sample of the evidence. You draw very faulty conclusions about what the result is going to be. So if you just look at what's happening today, or just the appearance of how current events seem to be going right now, or even in your own life, I've tried to do it God's way, and it just doesn't seem to be bringing very good results, and all those, you can draw some very faulty conclusions about whether God's way works or not. So Paul says, don't let anybody fool you. Don't let anybody lie to you and tell you that long term you're not going to reap what you've sown. You can sow something, and for a while it may seem like, if you sown to the flesh, it may seem like you're going to get away with that. It hasn't had any harmful effect. But that's too small a sample, isn't it? You're looking at too little of the evidence. Don't let anybody tell you, based upon just a little view of the total picture, that's all you look at. Don't let anybody say, you're beating the odds here. You're sowing to the flesh, and it's going to work out pretty good. That is a lie. It's the devil's lie, of course. It has been since the Garden of Eden. But you can disobey God and get away with it. But it's never true long term. Nobody would ever think it's true. If they didn't just look at a little slice of the evidence. But sometimes, sometimes that little slice of the evidence can be very persuasive. My life is going pretty good right now. I may well be tempted to think, you know, I know I'm not as faithful to the Lord as I ought to be, but I've got a pretty good life. Don't be deceived, Paul said. The law of the farm ultimately is going to ruin. When the harvest comes in, don't be deceived to think that you can sow one thing and reap something else. And it works exactly the opposite way as well. If all you look at is just the small evidence of today or even this year, or even 10 years, really, is a very small sample in terms of the history of the world. But let's just say, you know, this week, I've got a terrible problem to deal with. I'm discouraged. I've tried to serve the Lord faithfully, and here I've got this horrible problem. How can a person who's tried as hard as I have, how can it be turning out this badly? So I become discouraged, and I begin to think, well, you know, I've sown to the Spirit, but it doesn't look like I'm going to reap a very good harvest. What would Paul say? Don't be deceived. Don't let anybody tell you that you can sow to the Spirit and not have a good result. Don't pay too much attention to how it's working out right now. Put your faith in the Lord's promise. This is how you sow. You keep sowing to the Spirit that eventually, no matter what it looks like right now, eventually it's going to be a good result. Don't let the devil tell you otherwise or discourage you by thinking that it doesn't do any good to do good. This is not working out, so just quit. What a terrible lie that is. So that then is the context in which he says in verse 9, therefore, let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. Why do we keep going? Because we have the Lord's promise that eventually, whether we can see it right now, whether it seems to be working out that way right now or not, if we keep serving the Lord faithfully, the time is going to come when it'll be harvest time. In due season we will reap if if we do not give up. It's what the devil wants you to do. If he couldn't keep you from obeying the gospel, he's going to keep after you and see if he can discourage you to give up and lose your reward anyway. And because you didn't have enough endurance to wait until the harvest time. What's your life like right now? Is it easy? Is it hard? Well, most of us have to say it's a combination of both. Some things are easy, some things are hard. But I'll tell you, I know some people who have so much hardship to deal with that it makes me embarrassed that I've ever thought I had to deal with the problem. I compare what I've had to their much greater problems. I'm ashamed of myself for everything that I had it hard. Some people really have difficult lives. As Christians, I'm not talking about unbelievers. I'm talking about faithful Christians who have extremely difficult lives. Even in my own little realm of experience, it sometimes gets hard. I would be less than honest with you if I didn't say that there's some days when I think about giving up. The days when I'm not sure how much longer I can endure some things that I have to endure. And sometimes it's hard. Just make the choice to keep going. in the confidence. If it never gets any better in my lifetime, it is still worth it to keep going. Because in due season, we will reap if we don't give. I love that song, "This is Our Father's World." Remember what it says? "This is my Father's world. Oh, let me ne'er forget that though the wrong oft seems so strong, God is the ruler yet." So may I keep going. Some of you have heard these lessons that I do called Reaching Forward, based on the principle in Philippians 3:13. Reaching forward to the things that are ahead, getting the things that are behind. In that series of lessons, I make a public promise to audiences that I'm not going to give up. I believe there's some value in public promises, public commitments. You bind yourself to a course of action. It's good and honorable. In the hearing of witnesses, not a surprise, not a coincidence that we say marriage vows in front of witnesses. Make those promises in hearing of people who later on can say, "I heard you promise some things. I'm here to help you keep those promises." That's why we don't keep New Year's resolutions any better than we do, because we don't tell anybody about them. So then you set it aside, nobody's the worse, because they never knew about it. But you make a public promise. It's different. So in these series of lessons, I promise I'm not going to give up. And that public promise has been good for me to make. Years ago, I got into a sequence of events in my life that were so discouraging that I crashed and burned. I was in the midst of a depression that just seemed like it was going to quench the very life out of me. Cancel the whole third of the year of my gospel meetings, just was miserable. A sister in Bowling Green, Kentucky, who had heard those lessons and had heard me make that public promise, wrote me a long handwritten letter, which she said, "Brother Henry, I heard you publicly promise that you wouldn't give up. Don't do it." And that held me steady. Encouragement. It was a part of the encouragement that other people gave me, and fortunately at that time, to keep going. In the confidence that eventually, whether it happens in our lifetimes or not, all the wrongs are going to be righted, all of the tears will be dried, all of the injustices will be vindicated, and those who have kept going and endured whatever had to be endured, we'll enjoy the results of that harvest forever. In the meantime, it's tough. The Lord will help us. "My grace is sufficient for you," he said to Paul. "You're not going to ever have anything to deal with that I won't help you to deal with," but the Lord never promised it was going to be easy. And he never promised he would make the decision for us to keep going. We will have to make that choice. So, do not be deceived. If anybody tells you that you are an exception to the law of the farm, the law of the farm is inviolable in the long run. You will reap what you have sown. Before we leave Galatians 6 on that point, I want to just remind you of something. Who is it that we usually think needs to hear that passage? "Do not be deceived. You are going to reap what you sow." Usually it's somebody that's sowing to the flesh. Right? We bring that passage out to warn them. You keep sowing to the flesh, you're going to reap of the flesh corruption. Well, it does contain that warning, but that's not Paul's main point in the passage. That coin has two sides, so to the flesh, you love the flesh, reap corruption. But in the passage, Paul is more concerned to encourage those who are sowing to the Spirit to keep sowing and don't give up, because in due season you're going to reap eternal life. So the law of the farm is both sobering and encouraging. Sowing bad seed, it should be a warning that that's the kind of crop that's going to come up. But if you're sowing to the Spirit, the passage was meant more primarily in context to be encouraging. You keep sowing that, don't pay attention to whether it seems like it's working right now or not. You keep sowing to the Spirit. And in due season, in the Lord's good time, there will be a harvest. Don't be among those who lost your confidence in the principles of righteousness just because it didn't seem to be working out right now. I'm almost to the point where I'm not going to turn on the TV news or look at a newspaper ever again, because you don't get anything on the news except just a very narrow slice of what's going on. And it can be very misleading in terms of what's happening in the grander scheme of things. All you listen to is the news, you might think the bad guys are winning. That it doesn't do any good to stand up for what's right. I think Paul, if he were here today, would say, throw the newspaper away. Don't be deceived. Reap as we've sown, and if you keep sowing to the Spirit in due season, we will reap a harvest. If we don't give up in the meantime. Don't let anybody lie to you. And don't let anybody lie to you and tell you this is going to be easy. It is not. But hardship is what strengthens our muscles spiritually. People don't thrive spiritually when everything is going well and going easily. So maybe it will be good for us to have to be stronger and meet a higher level of difficulty. That may be the salvation of us, to have to learn to be that strong. So do you take a long-term view of God's blessings? I hope you do. Solomon observed in Ecclesiastes 9, verse 11, that the race is not always to the swift, nor the battle to the strong. What does he mean by that? Doesn't the fastest runner always win the race? And doesn't the strongest army always win the battle? No. If you just look at one day, you know, anything can happen on one day. There's so many variables, extenuating circumstances can come into play, and so sometimes the fastest runner may not win that race. He may not feel well that day, or he may stumble coming out of the starting blocks. A lot of things can happen that alter the outcome of just one race. Just one battle, and the strongest army may not win that battle. In sports, you know, world championship, really can't tell who's the best team by just one game, can you? That's why in baseball, which of course is the best sport, we have enough sense in baseball, if you're going to have a world champion, we'll play seven games if necessary to even out extenuating circumstances. Just one game, anything can happen. But more likely that the superior team is going to win a majority of seven contests, because the battle's not always to the strong, the race to the swift. And that's the way it is in life. The reason Solomon says that in Ecclesiastes is to remind us not to pay too much attention to momentary evidence. That won't tell you much of anything of any value. You've got to back up and take a much larger view before you draw any conclusions about what's good and what's not, and what's working and what's not. So we need to take a longer view, even in our attitude toward God. Many years ago, there was a sister in Christ who appealed to me for some advice about a very difficult marriage situation that she was in. I knew her husband, and truly, he would have been a hard person to live with. I've been a woman, I wouldn't want to be married to him. She came to me and confided that their marriage was just on the verge of breaking up. So, you know, what should I do, Gary? Well, all I ever know to do in those situations is just turn to some passages of Scripture and say, well, you know, here's what I think the Lord would say about that. And she just said, well, Gary, that's silly. I know him well enough to know that'd just make it worse. Well, I said, try it. Give it a try. May seem silly, may seem like that would be counterproductive, but that's what the Lord says, and that's all I can say. So she did, and a couple of weeks later, you know, she came back, she said, I could have told you how this is going to come out. She said, it's sure not. Doing what you said was the Lord's will about this has just made it much worse. After, you know, a whole 2 weeks of implementing these principles. And so I said, well, just persevere. I believe these are reliable principles. They may seem in the short term to work the other way, but you know, don't draw any hasty conclusions about this. Well, today they have a very happy marriage, not because of any advice I gave them, but to the credit of both of them, they didn't give up on the relationship, and by applying biblical principles, things turned in a better direction, but it took a while before the improvement started to show up. Sometimes we're that way with the Lord. I try things His way for just a little while and it seems not to work out. And so, see, Lord, I tried Your way just as I expected. It didn't work. My problems are just as bad as they were, if not worse. Trying to do the right thing has never gotten me anything but trouble. You just get right angry with the Lord. It's kind of what, you know, Moses did in Exodus chapter 5. The Lord had said, Moses, I want you to go down and deliver the people of Israel from Egypt. Did that sound like a good idea to Moses? No. He saw all kinds of problems with that. Tried to get out of it. Finally, the Lord just said, go. And so he did. But what was the result after Moses had his first interview with Pharaoh? At the very end of Exodus chapter 5. You remember Moses was just driven out from Pharaoh. Pharaoh, in essence, said, you are crazy. I am Pharaoh. Who is the Lord? Tell me what to do. Get out of here. He made the burdens of the people of Israel worse than they were before. What was Moses' response when he, next time he talked to the Lord about that? Moses turned to the Lord and said, O Lord, why have you done evil to this people? Why did you ever send me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people, and you have not delivered your people at all. Pretty bold talk, but that's about the same thing some of us sometimes say to the Lord. Lord, I could have told you this wouldn't work. These instructions are silly. This is not the way people think now. This is not going to be effective. What was Moses' problem? He's making a hasty conclusion. He just waited. The Lord's plan did work, but it didn't work on his schedule. He needed to wait to give the principles of the Lord's will time to work. We do too. Our main emphasis has to be on the end of the story. It's the only thing that got the Lord through his trials and tribulations. Hebrews 12, verse 2, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. Keeping your eye on the end of the story is the only thing that will help you to deal with the momentary difficulties. Whatever those difficulties may be, let me tell you, heaven is worth whatever hardships you may have to endure for, however long you have to endure them. It's worth it. More than worth it. I expect it's probably pretty silly for us to speculate at this point about how we're going to think when we get to heaven. But I have a strong suspicion that when we get to heaven, most of us are going to look back and say, whew, that was a close call. I almost gave up there. I am so glad I did not give up. As if we had, it wouldn't be there, would it? It would be away from the Lord eternally. So, what about these short-term benefits? They are nice while we have them. We're grateful for them. But we can't have such a shallow faith that everything depends upon whether we have these blessings and these good things to rejoice in right now. We need to be people who, like Job, who would serve the Lord just as well if we didn't have these things. So let me just put it to you this way. If, you know, as was the case in Job's situation, if Satan were allowed to take away from you, one by one, every temporal blessing that the Lord has allowed you to have so far in this life, how far down the list would he have to go taking those things away before you quit serving the Lord? Sobering question. Or let me put it this way. How much does the Lord have to pay you right now to keep you on his side? If the devil made the same accusation against you that he made against Job, well, do they serve the Lord for naught? Lord, you've richly blessed them for being faithful to you. But what would happen if those were taken away? I would hope that all of us would be just as faithful, with or without, you know, the icing on the cake. Heaven is the cake. Right now we've got a lot of icing, a lot of, you know, peripheral benefits, but we need to be willing to go toward heaven with or without any of these very fleeting blessings that we have right now. So to the church in Smyrna, in Revelation chapter 2 and verse 10, Christ said, "Do not fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison that you may be tested. And for 10 days you will have tribulation, but be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life." And to Thyatira, also in the second chapter of Revelation, verse 26, he said, "The one who conquers, the one who overcomes, and who keeps my works until the end, to him I will give authority over the nations." So, what did Paul say about it in the last verse, 1 Corinthians 15? 1 Corinthians 15:58. "Therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor in the Lord is not in vain." So, let us not grow weary of doing good. Let's not get tired of doing what's right. For in due season, we will reap. If we do not give up. And I will tell you here at the end what I told you at the beginning. That is, you have refreshed my faith and encouraged me this week. It's been such an uplifting experience for me, and I need such times. And I'll just tell you right now, there will be in the future, if I live very much longer and if the Lord doesn't return, there'll be some dark night in my life. I will be discouraged and tormented the things that I have to deal with. And the thought will come into my mind, "Well, Gary, why keep it? It'd just be so much easier to quit." And the memory of you will come into my mind. I remember your faithfulness, your encouragement, and I'll keep going. So thank you for the memories that you've given to me that will be stored away in my heart and will help keep me going in times when I might be tempted to do otherwise. Let's all keep going. But one last time, going to extend the Lord's invitation in this series of studies. Certainly, if you are here and outside the right relationship with the Lord, you don't have the hope that we've been talking about tonight. You could leave this assembly, forgiven of your sins, the hope of heaven, with the strength of the Lord who would be your Redeemer, who in the end would welcome you to his eternal home. Well done, good and faithful servant. That could begin tonight. You turn away from that. You're turning away from the best friend you ever had. Saying no to salvation. You may not have another opportunity to change your mind. Don't be that fool. We can help you obey the gospel. We want to do that. If there's some other need that you have, a spiritual nature, then we're here to encourage one another. So let us help you if we can, as we stand and sing the invitation song.